News drives markets, and every day, Montel's experienced reporters are on top of the stories that shape European market developments. Can you afford to miss out? Go to montelnews.com for the latest price-driving stories and a free trial.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Montel Weekly Podcast, bringing you energy matters in an informal setting. Despite having discussed the carbon market in detail with Ingvill Soros only 2 weeks ago, I feel obliged to return to developments in the EU ETS given recent price movements and the discussion around speculators in the market. So, listeners, we are very fortunate in having a star gallery of guests in today's show who will be able to explain what's happening to carbon prices and why they've risen by over 70% since November. Are these increases and falls of close to 7% sustainable in the medium to long term? So a warm welcome to Trevor Sikorski of Energy Aspects. How are you, Trevor?
Very good. Thank you, Richard.
And also joining us today is Bernadette Papp of Vertis. Hi, Bernadette. How are you?
Hi, Richard. I'm fine.
Excellent. Great to have you on board. We also have Marcus Ferdinand of ISIS. So a big hello to you too.
Good to be here.
Excellent. And last but by no means least is my old pal Alessandro Vitelli, who's been covering these markets since the 1880s. So buongiorno, Alessandro, and welcome back.
Thank you. Greetings to you.
Let's get started by looking at the recent discussion about speculators in the market, hedge funds, pension investment funds, financial boutique players. So they've become increasingly active in the ETS. But is the involvement of these speculators so negative, Trevor, if I can start with you?
Sure. No, I mean, speculation is good. Generally, it increases the efficiency of markets, it creates liquidity, it has all kinds of good things. And if you're kind of looking at it, it almost goes far to say is, you know, it certainly helps with the intertemporal efficiency of the market. And by that, I mean, you know, without them coming in and without them kind of bidding up prices, you wouldn't see future scarcity being reflected so much in the current period. And you'd say, you know, a lot of the involvement of more speculative capital is coming in for a fundamental reason. That fundamental reason, of course, is the expected tightness we're going to see in this market come, you know, the Green Deal policies and changes to caps and changes to linear reduction factors and changes to all those good things. You can add on to that changes to the MSR, but it's just a welter of, I would say, bullish things. And, you know, the market just probably wouldn't be reflecting it in much of a way without speculative capital coming in.
Hmm. I mean, I think we'll return to a lot of these factors later. But why is there this concern, Marcus, about the role of speculative capital in the market?
First, I would second what Trevor said. So in a way, kind of speculative positions or kind of the financial sector as such is quite a, I mean, it's kind of a lubricant for the market, right? So it kind of provides the liquidity required for compliance players as well to kind of make the trading kind of efficient. I mean, what happens obviously is when there is a too high influence, I would say, of speculative positions is that it's a bit, I would say it's frustrating for those who have to make investment decisions based on steady price signals, right? I mean, the speculative inflow can create quite a high degree of volatility. And I mean, having the price moving up by 50% over a 3 month time period, I would say undermines the market integrity as an instrument to provide a reliable price signal for those guys who need to invest in abatement technologies. So that's why it might be seen critical.
Hmm. What's your view here, Bernadette? I'm also interested to find out what's the difference between speculation and hedging, and can you really clearly define the two?
No, it's actually not really possible. Our company, Vertis, has always served compliance entities. And I have to confess that we are trading both the physical e-ways that get delivered to the accounts of the companies, but also the derivatives, futures, forwards, and options. It's very difficult to say, and even compliance entities are using these derivative products in order to cover their future emissions because they are trying to fix their margins. So it's not so easy to differentiate between actually compliance purchases and speculation. On the other hand, it's a question that we have received in the last couple of weeks, even months from our clients, what's happening in the market, because they have the feeling that the market got split into two. There are the compliance entities with their usual strategy, purchasing strategy in this market. And we have, let's say, these new players who have been active in the carbon market, actually, in my experience, since 2008, maybe their presence was not perceived that actively or that definitely since then, just in the last couple of months, but they were active, undeniably. And I couldn't agree more with the previous speakers that they also made a positive contribution to this market, because we have liquidity here. The carbon market has been always volatile, so this shouldn't be such a big surprise to the market participants. So I think, like everything, this coin also has its two sides.
Absolutely. So, Alessandro, who, if anybody, is concerned by the role of speculators in the carbon market?
I have my doubts that there are people out there who are concerned enough to take steps. All we have seen in the past fortnight is some unsubstantiated reports that European Commission staff representatives, we don't know who they are, have been discussing how to intervene in the market or whether to intervene in the market in a way to restrict access or influence of speculators. It's very difficult to nail down this. I spoke with someone from ESMA, the Securities and Markets Agency, and I asked them specifically, are you investigating ways to regulate the EUA derivative market? And they said, we have not received any mandate or any instruction from the European Commission to do so. So I think we have to look deeper into this, go back to the law, to the regulations, and see what options are available before we start speculating as to who might be thinking about doing it.
But is placing limits on the role of speculators in the market, is that a reasonable suggestion, Trevor? And how do you go about doing it anyway? I mean, it's...
I don't know if it's reasonable. what I would say is, in European energy market, position limits aren't on net. So if you look at a lot of... You can go on ICE and you can see all the commodities that have position limits on them. And that includes the TTF contracts. That includes, you know, a lot of the power contracts. So all of those, and, you know, and there's even a defined... You know, I would say limit for liquid markets, and I'd say the EU ETS doesn't fall into that, but it's about 2,500 lots for the prompt market and 2,500 lots for further dated. And in EUS terms, that would be basically say, well, you know, you could have, you know, 5 million tons of open interest. Now, if you look at what some of the hedgers are going to hold, they're going to hold a lot more than that. So if you what you're really looking to do is just to kind of cut down on speculative capital. I'm not sure how much speculative capital is out there with more than 500 million tons in open interest across the derivative. But certainly you could point to a lot of utilities who are, right? And then this is the same problem if you went for physical limits, because physical limits, you know, it would do nothing, right? If you put them onto the registries, because the only people who don't have to go physical eventually are going to be the specs. So not easy. I would say that they're not unheard of. We see them in other markets, but very hard to design to get right.
So what's your view here, Marcus? I mean, do you think placing limits is reasonable, is a way of containing this speculative bubble?
I think, first of all, the question is, do we really have a problem here at the moment, or is that noise, right? And I think what other people have said before now as well is, I mean, driving the market up to 40 euro by definition is not what's unintended in a way, right? It's, I think at the moment, what happens is that this probably happens too fast to be justified fundamentally. I mean, when we look into our modeling, we would still see the market closing this year at around 35 euros or so. So it's not too far off from where we are at the moment. It's a question of the speed of this price increase that I think is concerning people more than the actual presence of non-compliance players in this market. I mean, I'm not a financial market expert, so I can't really comment on what's feasible here and whatnot. I mean, what I do see is that still, I would say the speculative positions compared to the other part of the market, which is compliance player driven, is quite small still, right? So, I mean, this is still a compliance players market. In the end, then, I think it's a question of kind of how these strategies evolve over time on the speculative side. I mean, is it like more long-term oriented strategies, kind of buy and hold, trying to to combine some sort of like an environmental agenda with an investment? Or is it kind of a quickly in and out kind of strategy, which obviously adds much more kind of to the volatility in that regard, right? Which could be seen as a potential danger to this market. So again, I think what we have seen is somehow rumors that someone might have said something about holding limits. I mean, we had the same discussion, I think, when the MSR was kind of adopted, when the price actually was going up, because some market players actually kind of saw it as a possibility to turn their foresight into revenues, right? And I think the same happens now again with players actually anticipating that the market is going to be very, very short. I mean, fundamentally, that's a given. It comes at the period of time where we do debate an MSR review and the 2030 target change, which by definition will make this market quite a bit shorter. So I think this kind of links back to the intertemporal efficiency that was mentioned earlier as well. I mean, there are players who are willing to kind of anticipate these developments quicker than others.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think, Bernadette, that the problem, if it is one, is overblown here? That's not really the reason for these price movements are much more fundamentally driven, as both Trevor and Marcus have said.
Yeah, what we have seen, I think, is kind of an overreaction from actually everybody in
maybe
in
including
this market.
Us.
Yeah. Yeah, including journalists, to be honest. No, I just wanted to say two examples to show how difficult it is to differentiate between speculation and hedging. Like, if now rules get changed and there is a limitation on the position of the financial entities, then just imagine a utility coming and wanting to hedge positions 1 year ahead and just putting in one order of 150 lots. And if we take away the financial entities who provide the liquidity with one bigger order, it can move the market significantly, you know, to upwards. And he's just doing normal hedging, nothing else, you know. And another thing, no names, of course, but we have a client who said compliance entity, but saying, okay, the price went up significantly, but once there is a correction in this market, we are ready to hedge our emissions 2-3 years ahead with prices, let's say, €3 below current price levels. So is that a speculation then or not? I wouldn't say, but they need the liquidity, they need the volatility to do that. So I think, as I've mentioned, all coins have the two sides. And the presence of the financial entities has its pros and cons, of course. I personally would not put any limitation on their positions.
So, Alessandro, apart from, you know, spoken to ESMA, which you can read on Montel News, but also you've looked into Article 29A, haven't you? Could you tell us a little bit about what this is and if that could be used in this circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, Article 29A is specifically written to deal with rapid price spikes. It asks, or rather, it sets a set of criteria that generates what I would call a multiplier. If the last 6 months' average price is more than three times the price of either the last 2 years or the last two full calendar years, depending on your interpretation, that should trigger a meeting of a climate change committee within the European Commission's DG Clima, and they would then discuss what options are available to them to damp down that price spike. Now, back end of 2018, prices had increased by such an extent from, what was it, €7, €6 back in 2017, up towards 25, that the multiplier did reach, according to some calculations, 3. Other calculations said it hadn't quite reached 3. So essentially, there should have been or could have been a meeting of that climate change committee within DG Clima at that time. There wasn't. So that kind of suggests another interpretation of Article 29A, which meant that the multiplier wasn't above 3. We're currently now in a situation where the multiplier is just above 1 or 1 point something. We're nowhere near 2 and nowhere near 3 by any means yet, because we've had high prices now for the past 2 years. So that avenue, I don't think, is open to the Commission for intervention. And it does beg the question, would that address this? I'm not entirely sure it would. You then have to go back to other regulations, MIFID, MIFIR, the review of MIFID, which is happening this year, what that might lead ESMA to be asked to do. And you have to ask yourself the question, what is the commission going to regulate? Is it going to regulate physical holdings in the registry, or is it going to regulate holdings of futures and derivatives positions? Because the two are not the same. At the same time, also, compliance strategies use both futures and physical EUAs. So there's also that concern, because if ESMA does regulate futures holdings, it might upset some companies' strategies for hedging.
Trevor, I mean, let's get back to the fundamentals here and say, okay, you know, you build a case, you three analysts here, build a strong case for a fundamental reason for these high prices. But is there a case to say that if prices go up much beyond 40, that there is increased political pressure from certain member states that could be exerted upon the commission? Or is that just a red herring?
No, it's not a red herring. I mean, politicians are sensitive to pricing, but it's hard to know what that price level is. And I think, you know, Marcus was probably referring to it, that in some ways, this isn't really, you know, this price increase isn't at a level that the commission, you would feel, would be uncomfortable with, you know. You know, we've had lots and lots of policy formation, which is all about getting prices higher. You know, the MSR, you know, backloading. You know, it's been a decade of trying to get carbon prices higher, so people will actually do something about it. You know, and invest heavier on the back of the carbon price signal. So, you know, it kind of feels like 40. You know, 45. You know, none of that feels like it's a massive issue for the commission. And, you know, I think, you know, we've made the argument here already today, but, you know, all that's happening is some of that tightness is being brought into the market earlier than what we would have expected, given, you know, the fundamentals we see on the ground, let's say today in 2021. And there's a number of things kind of feeding into it, you know, at the moment, which has maybe made it a bit easier for reasonably small volumes to drive the market up. You know, the lack of auctions through January means, you know, we haven't had a cumulative amount of heavy supply yet. The lack of free allocation, you know, the fact we're still in the compliance window for 2020. You know, there's all these kinds of factors that are kind of adding up. And I don't think any of them were behind it. You know, I mean, you know, it seems a very spec-driven kind of event, particularly when you look at the increases in call options and other ways that the market likes to express a more bullish, you know, kind of viewpoint. So it doesn't, you know, I think at this point, you're not really saying there's anything in the market that would allow the commission as regulator of the market to step in. And I don't think the price levels are really at that level that really is saying, you know, we have a problem that politically has to be solved at this time. Mm.
Have you revised your forecasts in light of the price rises we've seen in the last few months?
Well, for Q1, yeah.
could you tell us more, Trevor, for Q1 and for the full year?
Well, I mean, we'd been saying, and I think we were probably on the same page as most of the other analysts, but we'd basically been saying we thought that the first half of this year would begin, you know, trading in a 30 to 35 euro per ton range. Probably biased towards the bottom half of that in the second half of this when you started auctions. And of course, you started auctions and we just had the opposite. We had a movement to a higher range. Now, I think it's a little bit, it is very, very hard to call in terms of where those price ranges go. But it, the longer it stays above, you know, 35, and the longer it's, you know, and if it continues to see technical support around 37 and things like that, the longer you get that, the more comfortable the market gets in a higher trading range, and then the harder and harder it becomes to move down below, because you're resetting the market's expectations from 30 being a good entry point to 35 being a good entry point, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have just moved to a higher equilibrium point. And so we've moved our forecasts up to be in that 35 to 40 range probably for now, because we just think, you know, there is some supportive stuff at the moment. And when they start to come off, you're into the world of policy formation and the June dump of all that information, which is going to be bullish probably for the market.
Marcus, how about your forecasts here, not just for Q1 and but for the whole year as well?
I would say fairly stable, despite the recent developments. I mean, it's well, as an analyst, especially an analyst that has been in the market for about 10 years now, I mean, I've seen quite a few relatively rapid price movements with lots of discussion around them, which faded away very quickly as well. So I mean, it's again, it's a question whether this is a fundamental change to the underlying market situation at the moment, or whether this is a, let's say, according to plan with regards to demand supply dynamics, with a little, let's say, hiccup caused by a few commentaries in newspapers, potentially hoping to attract additional waves of money to this market, right? And then kind of trying to push it up. So I would currently, as I said before, I would currently see the market still being dominated by compliance related players, with obviously an increasing interest from the financial / investor segment, right? So there is some change happening. This is not the only change. There's also change happening in terms of speed of decarbonization, in terms of how the power sector positions itself against the industry sectors, right? With a much higher rate of decarbonization on the power sector side, the level of fuel switching still being there, but decreasing over time, because we do have lots of kind of fossil fuel generation being phased out over the period of the next 5 to 10 years. And where then the question turns more into, is this market price that we currently see in the market framework as we see it kind of a good enough policy instrument to also decrease emissions more on the industry side, right? So, I mean, these kind of questions, obviously on a different level, come up when you look into price forecasting. So as said, until 2030, we do see the market being relatively tight. I mean, depending obviously on MSR review on 2030 target setting, but general notion is tightness. And then you will always have quite a few kind of events like this one at the moment that kind of cause variations to that price trajectory.
Perfect. And Bernadette, if I can then ask your view as well on prices for this year and beyond.
For this year, we have also revised upwards a little bit our expectations due to the market situation we experienced already in the first months of the year, and also due to expected changes, or at least tabled changes, by the European Commission referring to the revised 2030 target. For this year, we expect the prices to move in the base case scenario. We generally elaborate different scenarios. For this year, in our base case scenario, we expect the price to move between 32 and 42 euros. And for the long run, so until 2030, we do not really prepare a long-term model, but at least until the half of the current phase, we see that the price could reach a 50 euro price level easily. And then, of course, there are more optimistic and more pessimistic scenarios to that.
Absolutely. So I was going to ask you, Alessandro, I mean, you speak to analysts and traders in the market regularly. What kind of a spread are we talking for average prices for this year?
I think where we are today is a little bit beyond some people's expectations. I mean, bear in mind, last summer, we were still around the 22 to 25 mark. This is summer 2020. So we have made an awful lot of ground up in just a few short months. And when I held my informal poll of market participants and general observers, you know, the numbers were in the mid upper 30s. So getting above 40 already, I think, exceeds most people's expectations. I think the other thing, and the things is important to point out, is that the EU itself, the Commission rather, should not be overly surprised at where prices are. They themselves published their hydrogen strategy last summer, in which they said they expect the carbon price to have to be 90 euros by 2030 in order to have green hydrogen competing. So they've kind of set the target themselves with that. And I think that any market movement that moves to fulfill their expectations, policy expectations, I should add, shouldn't be a surprise.
If I can ask you guys to sort of wrap up today's pod, a very, very interesting discussion, both in terms of what's happening on the speculative side and also fundamentally. But I think, you know, we've got the discussion around speculation. We've got the 2030 targets coming up, the review of the EU ETS. What would be on your wish list to the Commission, Trevor?
I really don't have any.
No? Just let them proceed as they're doing at the moment.
Well, I mean, I think my wish list would be generally for light touch regulation. I don't think this market needs heavy-handed regulation. I think when we look at things like the MSR review, we don't really know what this market will function like when you start getting down to, you know, to even less than a gigatons of surplus, right? So why are you going to be playing around and adjusting a whole bunch of parameters in something we really don't, you know, when we really don't know what this market's going to behave like when you get down there. And if you're saying, you know, we're worried about a little bit of speculative capital coming in when we still have 1.6 gigatons of surplus, then I think, you know, you've got to really, really say, well, you can't be moving, you know, you shouldn't be moving those MSR parameters around a lot, because that, if anything, is going to make this market really tight and take a lot of inherent flexibility in this market out of it. So my wish list would just be, you know, very light touch regulation on those kinds of things.
Thanks. And you, Marcus?
Well, being an independent analyst in this market, I generally do not have wish list for political decision makers. Usually, I just look at what's on the plate and then analyze it. I mean, we have just released a report actually on the interplay between the MSR review and the 2030 target discussion, and it basically shows that there's obviously more policy processes and legislative processes outplaying at the moment, but especially those two are quite important for how the market positions itself or how it acts over the next 10 years. So those reforms certainly have to be looked at in tandem, because the interplay is quite significant to the market balance and to prices. We have looked into what a rebasing potentially could mean to the market, and we basically came to the conclusion that obviously the earlier the 2030 target trajectory is put in place, the less importance there is on the MSR, right? So you basically reduce the significance of the MSR as a price driver, which I think in a way is an intended kind of political decision when you sharpen the 2030 target. So I would say this is at least the direction that I would think the market would favor. So a bit along the lines of what Trevor as well said, kind of don't be micromanaging it, but make sure that until the kind of increased 2030 target ambition is in place, then the MSR is there as a tool to kind of basically protect the market from shocks.
And Bernadette, can I ask you as well, what would you like to see on the policy front?
My only wish is timely action. And I think all the compliance entities would agree with me. So for me as analyst, the sooner we have the decisions, so less negotiating time between Council, Parliament and Commission, the better our models or more accurate our models can be. And also for the compliance entities we are serving, it's easier to prepare for the upcoming challenges.
Last but not least, again, Alessandro, you're the last in line. What do you think? What's on your wish list?
No, well, I wish I will be able to report on these developments as they happen. I wish I'll be able to understand them. And that's about as far as I'm prepared to go as a journalist. I don't think I can have a view.
And explain them to the market, of course, as well.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you, all of you, very much for joining the Montel Weekly podcast this week. I think we had a fascinating discussion and highlighted certainly all the main points that are relevant at the moment and will be for the foreseeable future. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
So listeners, you can now follow the podcast on our own Twitter account, aptly named the Montel Weekly Podcast. Please direct message any suggestions, questions, or, you know, let us know if you think you have a good idea for a guest on the show. You can also send us an email to podcast@montelnews.com. Lastly, remember to keep up to date with all that's happening in energy markets on Montel News. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thank you and goodbye.